till he was 18 years old. John recently made his way to Prince Edward Island. He spent a few months here, working at the occasional job. He's also continued to operate a website for people who also grew up in foster care about the challenges and issues they face into adulthood. John has visions of a support system he'd like to see in cities across the country. He joined us in the studio to share his story. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon.
So you've been on the island for a while now, and people may have heard some of your story before. You came to the island in a unique fashion. Can you tell us a bit about why you came here and how?
I started out from Toronto on a walk, actually Pickering, just east of Toronto, because for about 2 years I was trying to get my records from Children's Aid Society, the Catholic Children's Aid in Toronto. But they have confidentiality regulations that they don't allow you to have them. So I've been kind of protesting that whole thing and decided to start a walk out east and west eventually. So yeah, I ended up out here in PEI in August, so it took me about a month. I left in the beginning of July and got here middle of August. So.
And why was PEI the destination?
Just east to start. Mm-hmm. And then when I got here, it was quite time enough to take a break. I was in pretty rough shape.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd take a break, got a couple jobs here, and just going to hang for the winter and then head back. I did come here with the thought of hopefully meeting eventually somebody in the family, which my mother was born and raised here. There's my great uncle and an aunt who live here. So I've been able to contact the aunt, and I've since lost the number, but she was going to hook up with me and have a coffee and chat. And the great uncle was not so enthusiastic.
Right.
Yeah, so I think they're just typical fears, and you know, mm-hmm. people wonder what does he want, you know.
Can you take us through your story a bit, John, when you went into foster care and how long?
I started in foster care. It started when I was 18 months old. My mom was an alcoholic, and she was bipolar as well, and I don't think they had the understanding that they have of it now, so it was just too much, I guess, for them to understand how to help or something. So there's my two older sisters, Kathy, Linda, and my brother Ron. No confidentiality issues there.
Mm-hmm.
And they went into care as well. We were all taken in, and that would be 1972-ish, and separated. And then after that, I went through maybe 10 homes or so, maybe 8 or 9 homes with my brother. And then I was separated from him for the rest of the duration, which I then met 9 years later, which is a total coincidence. I was applying for a job as a bike courier downtown Toronto, and in he walked. He was working for the same company.
And that's how you met your brother?
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
What was that like?
Oh, it was incredible. I was in shock, I think. I was sitting there with the application on my lap on a clipboard, and I was filling it out, and when I looked, all I saw was his legs. Like, I didn't even see him. I just saw his legs go by, and I knew it was him. So it was pretty emotional. We just like hugged each other in the office, and you know, the couriers are tough guys, right? They're not, you know, they don't do that. But we didn't care. We were hugging and crying, and it was pretty cool. So,
but as you're saying that, John, it just sounds so difficult for a young person. Hmm. Can you talk a bit about the challenges and then that experience?
Yeah, moving a lot is the biggest issue, I think, and I've tried to analyze it over the years and try and figure out why is it a big deal. Everybody tells me get over it, move on, you know, like, and I've tried to figure it out why can't I figure it out. But I'm starting, I think, to grasp it, is that when you move so much, you're all over the place, you're always the new kid in school, you're always anything you start that you're interested in is then taken away, and you're, you know, you have no interest, no hobbies, or if you do, they're, you know, allowed to finish them for just because you move. And I'm not knocking foster parents in any way. That's not the goal of this. It's just there were good foster parents for sure, and there are tons of them out there. It's definite. And every now and then, in every crowd, there's a bad apple. So, you know, things have happened to my brother and myself, which, you know, witnessing it and also getting it at the same time is kind of hard. And so, you know, you try to say, well, you know, it's in the past, but it's not really, sort of.
Like what?
I guess trying to be selfish, like have self-esteem or as being assertive, like I don't know if you can tell talking to you here, but I can't even look you in the eye a lot of times when I'm talking. It's a hard thing to do, even though I try. And that's a problem with, like, job interviews, because when you look away, that's a sign of mistrust, usually. So that's kind of hard thing to deal with. And this is only, like, one little thing of, like, so many things Just consistency and friends, losing friends all the time, you know, stuff like that. So.
Yeah, and I mean, you're having, like you say, different guardians of, you know, different personalities. And mm-hmm. You were saying the bad apples. Like, what happened? What experiences have you faced?
Well, I've had bizarre things happen for a period of time. When I was 6 till 10, I was in a home, and I used to wet the bed all the time. And in the mornings, the guy would wake us up. And if the bed was wet, I would be taken down into the basement. And they had this big furnace. It's sort of like an oil drum on its side with a pipe up the back, a chimney. And he would sit me on that. It was cast iron, though. And so that was one thing he used to do all the time. It would scare the heck out of me. Then one time, I don't know if it was just for emphasis or to really try and get a point home, he opened the front door of the stove and pushed me in head first. So this, even in itself, it's something like, okay, whatever, it happened in the past. But now I have all these stupid fears, like I could go get a job welding maybe, but I totally have a fear of fire, it sparks, and, you know, so.
But you did have good experiences, too, with other foster parents. And
well, good just means non-existent, really, like,
okay,
that I don't have memories, because the ones I stayed with the longest was three homes, 4 years each, and they were. One family was good, actually, the LeBretons, and I'll never kind of forget them. They were very nice. So we were there for 4 years, and they were nice to us, and I just, for some reason, don't have many incidental memories of being with them. It was just, that was a good place, and I had good feelings being there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you established this website a couple of years ago. Why did you decide to do that?
It started out with, I had some kind of a break or a snap or something, a breakdown, I guess they call it, where all of a sudden, I don't know why, but I started having, like, dreams and flashbacks and stuff of, like, emotional, like, little things. I would picture the tap in a bathroom at a house in a dream, right, just for an instant. And I'd wake up crying and wondering what, you know, I didn't get it. And I've usually been a robot pretty well my whole life, just John the Funny Guy. Everybody knew me as John the Funny Guy. So I spent, I think, about a month crying in my apartment, just for no reason. I couldn't figure it out. I just was frustrated with everything, not being able to hold work and all that, and I just kind of finally had a breakdown, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then I decided there's got to be other people out there feeling the same thing, like, just why, you know, what's going on? So I thought, I'll try and make a website and start it there. It was like that for about a month. It was just a reaching out, hey, anybody else? And then when I tried to get my records, which was part of the, I want to know what's happened in my past, then I decided to try and get them. So I went to get the records, and they refused me to have copies of them. They say they give you access, which they do. You're allowed to go in to the Children's Aid office and look at your papers there, which are photocopies with liquid paper, you know, blanked out. But you're not allowed to take these copies home.
What would it mean to you to have those records?
This is a tough one to explain to people who don't know, but the closest thing I've been able to explain it as is these records are not just family records. They're not things about my other family members. It's records about me. So before the age of 18, I don't know anybody who I can talk to who knew me. So it's like this big, huge hole in my life where I don't have any connection. So these papers, when you see the handwriting, like that's the important part, is the actual handwriting to see, wow, look at that, I really did exist. You know, like it's bizarre. But the closest thing I can make other people understand is if you had a family note from your mother and she's, you know, passed on or, you know, or just, if she wrote notes and you were no longer able to contact her in some way, then you wanted to get those notes that she wrote, but somebody was going to type them to you instead. Because I think that's the closest thing, is you don't get to see the handwriting and the connection, and mm-hmm. that's the human side of it, I guess, that people don't see beyond legislation, which there's a lack of. There is no legislation, actually.
And so you try to get these records and were just shut down?
Yeah. For 2 years, I've been getting shut down on this.
And have you found other people with this website in a similar situation?
Yeah, but I mostly get American responses. It's the same issue in the States. But from Canada, I'm starting to finally get more. And there are a lot of people who are trying to get the records. But that's not even the primary focus. For me, it is, in my situation. Most people, I think, seem to be okay with getting transcriptions. After the past year of getting emails from people across Canada, they're all suffering the same problems that I'm talking about, all these other things. So I thought, well, you know, there's got to be something we can do. I mean, there's nothing, if you ask around, there's nothing for adult survivors of foster care.
Mm-hmm.
And survivor's a picky word. People get really tense on it because it sounds like it's all bad. But for the ones that are survivors, we'll put it that way. Yes, I'm hoping to reach out to them. I get an average of about 20 hits a day.
And how important is it to you to hear from other people who are in this similar situation?
Oh, it's incredibly ensuring, self-assuring, mm-hmm. because I don't feel like just an idiot anymore. Like, I realize that there's more of us out there suffering the same problems. So it's really good to know, and then I don't feel like a loser anymore. Well, as much of one. But, yeah.
And when you say suffering the same problems, what you're talking about after foster care. And,
yes.
You know, obviously you've been through this system and had a lot of ups and a lot of downs. And when you get out, what problems do you face? You talked about self-esteem issues, that type of
right.
thing.
Right. Yeah, and how do they affect you in the real world is I've basically lived on and off welfare since 88, which I'm not proud of at all. I'm not lazy. I'm a pretty smart guy. I have computer skills coming out the wazoo. But the hardest part is going for, like, the interviews. You go for the interviews, and like I said, you're not able to put up a good front or whatever that everybody else can fake or whatever they do. I know everybody's nervous, but it's even worse when you're interviewing. It's really hard to promote yourself. Feel like I get just like I am now, getting all choked up. That's how it doesn't sound good in an interview to be like this. So, and then they think, well, how would he be as a client service rep or, you know, for tech support?
You have a section on your website called Dream Facility, and I don't know if this is your idea or one that mm-hmm. This is your idea.
Yeah.
So what is your dream? What would you like to see happen?
I thought of it, and I have realized that there is a similar place called Park, and it's for youth. But my dream was more about something that would be all across Canada, like a YMCA-type facility, where every city has one, or every major city at least, in every province. And it would have facilities that are, I guess, specifically for this, for former foster kids who are adults who maybe left the system and didn't find the youth assistance that there is available out there because they were sick and tired of the system and they just wanted to leave. And then 10 years later, they're having problems and they go back. They're not eligible.
Mm-hmm.
So something that would be open to all ages. Definitely would. I mean, you'd have to be of foster care for it to be eligible, I guess. And it's just a dream I've had for a couple of years that I wanted to have, that they could go and there could be art facilities where they can express themselves through art, theater, job skills that you don't have to, like, be eligible for EI and all that. You know, you can just go in, sit down and start using, say, a computer and, you know, video editing, audio editing, stuff that will give them good skills without all the requirements that most programs need.
Mm-hmm.
And college, I find it really hard. I've tried two or three times to apply for college, and for some reason I just can't sit with the forms and I just can't get through them. I don't get it for some reason. So to have some mentoring programs too, that they can sit and bring their papers in when they got to get something done. And
it's counseling services as well, I know you mentioned.
Right,
there.
Yeah.
So this is a dream. How do you make the dream a reality? Just, I guess, you're putting it on the website and hoping other people give their
ideas? I
think
so, because I'm definitely not the kind of guy that's going to be able to do this by myself. But I know if there's support and there's enough people, I definitely would love to be a part of it. And I think it's something that is required. I've had people tell me it's required, which is also on the same page at the end. I got a couple of feedbacks for it, and it's, you know, they said they'd love to be a part of it.
And just the shared experience, like you're saying, how important that is.
Yeah, and there's a brother sisterhood to it all as well. There's the one lady sent me an email, and she was in care, I think it was 36 to 1950, and she said, "Wow, this is amazing. You know, it's good to see this is out here." And then she said, "It's funny how we call each other brother, and how we feel like brother and sister to each other." So there's that connection too, mm-hmm. just knowing other people have been through it.
So we should give people the website and let them know how to find you. So
yeah.
it's HTTP, right? Mm-hmm. You do the
okay.
whole spiel there, John.
Yeah. It's important not to do the www. I'm going to do it in two ways. There's the http://afterfostercare.tripod.com, or just go onto any search engine like yahoo.com or google.com and search for Canadian After Foster Care and you'll find it.
Well, John Dunn, it was a pleasure meeting you. Thanks so much
very
for
much.
Sharing your story. Appreciate it. And as well, you can also find a link to John's website, the After Foster Care website, from our webpage, which is pei.cbc.ca. And if you'd like to get a hold of us here at Main Street, our toll-free talkback line, the number is 1-800-680-1898. and our email address is mainstreet@charlottetown.cbc.ca.
So there you go, that was me on the radio. Freak me out or what? Yeah, well, anyway, this is going to be added to the After Foster Care radio show. So, thanks for listening and goodbye.